This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This morning, I talked to Charyan Varghese. He's the Regional Managing Director and Vice President for ASEAN and South Asia at the global software firm Oracle. Now, Charyan, welcome to the show and welcome to the grill. Now, you cover a whole bunch of countries in the region, but specifically, I'd like to start with Malaysia. And I'd just like to get some sort of perspective from you on how big Malaysia is within your corporate footprint in the region.
Oh, very good morning to you, Chuang, and thank you for having me on the show. To answer your question, Malaysia is a very important part of our business, especially in the ASEAN and our emerging countries bloc. I say that for two reasons, prima facie. One, because we have created Malaysia as a software hub for us. We operate a big manpower force from there, which is supporting Malaysia for sure, but it is also supporting a whole lot of other ASEAN countries. So that for us is pretty exciting. And the second most thing is Malaysia as a country has been on our platforms and our technologies and some wonderful customers which we have signed over many years. So in the business interest as well as human capital interest, I would say Malaysia is a very capital as well as a resource-rich intensive country for us.
Yeah, I saw that announcement you made. You started a cloud solutions hub in our country, and that investment was important to the nation. But I'd just like to get some perspective from you in terms of how good or how bad or how lukewarm business is, given the conditions in the global economy, which indicates that the corporate spend in IT software to be migrating sideways or even downwards.
So, John, for us as an IT technology company, the winds of change on the global economy is sometimes in our favor. So as you all aware that as the world moved towards the Industrial Revolution 4.0, we are at the cusp of some leading technologies like our blockchain, AI, ML, and many interesting products around the anvil. I think the good news is that in the current industrial wave, we find that if countries have to transform, if organizations have to transform, the only lever with them is to transform from a technological standpoint. So although there are waves of uncertainty, both geopolitical as well as geographic, we do believe this is a great time in history where technology companies in general will benefit out of it. There can be a dip, there can be a wave which can come in, but I think overall, it's a great time for us from a technology standpoint. To address your point specifically on a solution hub which we invested in Malaysia, I think the reason was we find Malaysia still a very active destination for bringing in good talent. I think the price points are great. The ability for us to get some faster people within the resource community, good talent pool, good engineering colleges, good business people on the ground. I think that for us is very important in our area. And thereby, we continue to trust in that economy and in that country.
Yeah, Charyan, I'm glad you raised the point about talents because I also want to point out the fact that you come from Africa. So Africa, some people might say, is much more homogenous as a continent than Asia and ASEAN, over which now you now manage. ASEAN, I think 12, 13 countries, and of course you also cover South Asia, India, Pakistan, growing economies. These are all very, very different countries, culturally speaking, in terms of the speeds of the economy, in terms of the maturity of the corporations within. So when you set up and you manage businesses within this very diverse region, tons of challenges, people specifically, even sizes of the economy. How do you manage these things specifically? Let's start with talent.
Sure. I think a very interesting question. As I moved on from my Africa journey, in Africa, I managed 54 countries and 7 islands. So when I manage the current crop of countries, roughly around 20, I think that from a dynamic standpoint, I would say it is much smaller in size. Africa was a very vast continent. But a very unique standpoint is what you mentioned about talent. Though African journey was, I would say, breached for great good people and talent on the continent, I think this is a place of surplus talent. I think to find that diamonds from the mine is what the challenge is. So all these countries have got a vibrant population. The young millennial talent is in abundance. And the getting the right mix of skills is where we are is a current challenge. So sometimes in business, you need to have three portfolio of people. One is the millennial group, one is the mid-management, and one is the good, matured people who are able to take your business. So I think getting that combination right is what is truly a competition. It's truly a challenge for us. And last but not the least, in our business, it's a constant learn, unlearn, and relearn story. So the best of the talent have to rebuild their skills. They have to be up to date, constant learning, reading, enrolling for programs outside their comfort zone. But I do believe in, if one thing which has made me happy on this job is the availability of talent. There are so many jobs available. There are choices to make. If it is not Oracle, it's the next company. So I think people have great choices to choose. So I think not only do I have to harness good talent, I also have to be a great employer to keep that talent intact. So this for me is my talent pitch.
So in your war for talent and trying to win it against your competitors, which countries are the biggest sources of talent within your 20-country footprint? And how are you harnessing them in terms of spreading these people around the region?
The talent pool is available, I think, in pretty much in all the ASEAN countries which we manage. No specific region to say that we have a dearth of skills. Our dearth of skills come especially in countries where English is not the language of native operations. I give some examples. We do have some challenges in Cambodia. We do face problems while we do in Thailand or in Vietnam because market is rich and a good English speaking plus the local Thai or good English plus Vietnamese skills, those are difficult to find because you have to articulate that. But look at the migrating countries where you have a huge expat population, people are willing to come. So Malaysia and Singapore are two hot hubs where any expat or anyone with good knowledge is willing to be invested. Okay, what's the great news? There is not much of a brain drain in these two countries, whereas in some of the other countries, there's a huge brain drain. In some countries like India, where you see there's a reverse brain drain. So a lot of people who went back to the valley is back now. We find that similar trend in Pakistan. But in some of this country, the language articulation, which is still a must, especially when you deal with government bodies. In private sectors, in banks, English is good enough. But when you are dealing with the government, so local language, the local nuances and culture becomes extremely important. And thereby, some of these countries, I would surely say, the scouting for talent and keeping the good people on board becomes imperative.
Well, that's right, because now your competition comprises some players that were not around when Larry Ellison was really king of the heap back two decades ago. You've got people like Google, Amazon, Apple, clearly, all in the fray where the war for talent is going on. How do you get the best talent when these other players are in the market for the same talent?
It's such a good question and a coincidence. You know, we celebrated our birthday yesterday. We are 42 years old, and they say that good wine matures with age. Okay, so we matured with age. We've seen for sure technology companies are so the Googles, the Apples of the world have also spent almost two decades now. So they are no longer the new boys on the game. However, one symbolic thing which has happened with Oracle is that when we started off as an organization, we thrived on database. That was our origin as a relational database. And fast forward 42 years, you will see that data is still the most important portfolio. So maybe Larry would not have imagined the power of the company, what he's building 42 years back. However, if you look today, everything is data. Organizations which make sense of their data are the ones who pivot and make a differentiation. Governments who are able to use their data right for their citizens are the ones who are able to show great governance on corporate citizen services. So I still believe that we are in a sweet spot. We were the custodians of data. And the only thing is that in the early ages, in 42 years back, we were custodians and storage of data. Today, we have tried to utilize or monetize and make sense of the data through our new technologies, but data is still very relevant. So though we feel we are been in the market for long, but I think our positioning and our relevance of our product suite is much larger than where we started with.
I'm talking today to Charyan Varughese, the Regional Managing Director and Vice President for ASEAN and South Asia at the global software firm Oracle. Charyan, we're going to come back after the break and we're going to be talking about global competition and the cloud. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Today on the Breakfast Grill, I'm talking to Charyan Varughese. He is the Regional Managing Director and the Vice President for ASEAN and South Asia at the global software firm Oracle. Charyan, you talked about how 42 years ago you were the custodians and you built your name on the enterprise database market. But some would say that you've lost the battle or is very fast losing the battle with the cloud, with Amazon Web Services very much in the frame. Now, I think most notably, I want to cite the fact that you acted against the Pentagon in America for pursuing a single vendor policy for its JEDI program, which is a very lucrative government project. You actually instituted such claims even before the Pentagon closed its sourcing project, indicating that you were not confident of getting the job. Now, I guess the broader macro concern here is that Oracle has not been able to innovate as quickly as the Amazons of this world. How would you respond?
As an organization, we have very compelling technologies with us. What happened to be an organization which has evolved, I think some of the companies are born in the cloud. So for them, they have a competitive advantage. What we have done is we have built our products from grounds up. And what the world today looks as cloud as a generic portfolio is unfortunately not so generic. We actually have a spit of class within that cloud. So we sub-segregated, the industry sub-segregated it into IaaS, infrastructure, into platform, into software application, and data as a service. Now, when you have four classification of that, and when you lead in a category of platform, and when you lead in the category of SaaS as number one player, that's a huge differentiation. So when typically our competition just classifies it by revenue and then they seem to be pretty big, but I think the world turns to sometimes ignore or probably be in the wrong guidance that it's only infrastructure is probably where we have lost a few of the battles. But I think if you look at where the opportunities of cloud are, the game has only begun. It's an opportunity which is going to be so big, and the players who play in all the layers, which is SaaS, PaaS, ES, and DaaS, are the ones who will finally lead the race. Of course, there will be people who will have a head start, but however, as I said, being the custodians of data, that data autonomous databases will make or break the cloud race. So pretty optimistic that with 430,000 customer base of Oracle spanning over 175 countries, when our customers and our clients will actually embark or migrate from their models, what they are using, whether it is hybrid or on-prem or licenses, and when they start the journey, we will have a great head-on advantage. That's what we strongly believe in.
Well, it's not a battle that has just begun, Charyan, because Amazon Web Services, that division has been really one of the key catalysts behind Amazon's march towards a trillion-dollar company. Same with Microsoft, which has also seen a revival in its fortunes thanks to its work in the cloud. A lot of people say that Oracle has lost and continues to lose ground in this very lucrative business. And it's not a new battle. It's been a battle that's been raging for at least the last five to 10 years.
Good question. And I can say that I reclassify that. When you put everything into a single bucket and call that as cloud, is a lot different than sub-segmenting it. So if you look at some of our numbers, which is looking into the market space, we've become number one in North America on our software application. The entire small and medium business where we were thriving through our application software with some very strong acquisitions through NetSuite, what we made, we've started to take market share. Now, the bigger boys of the game, so-called trillion dollars players, are not playing in that segment. Those people are completely irrelevant in that business software. Some of the bigger cloud players are playing in productivity tools, which is not our core area of play. We go back and saying we are a business software company. We will retain that market leadership in business software. And the market of cloud is pretty huge. There can be an infrastructure player. You can put hundreds and hundreds of storage into the cloud and still be called number one. But that's not where we want to thrive on. We were supporting businesses. Our core job was to support large enterprises, support the SME sector. And that's where we feel that our run to cloud has just begun. So the world has started and seen a few players, but on the business software side, it is just the cloud journey has just started off a few years back, and the key players are still trying to take market share from there.
Well, you've got some ways to go, because when I look at some of the statistics, according to RightScale 2018, stated at the Cloud Report, only 5% of enterprises have adopted Oracle Cloud, compared with 68% for Amazon Web, 58% for Microsoft Azure, and 19% for Google Cloud. So these are not small players. You're up against the big boys, and some of these big boys are worth a multiple of Oracle. So again, I mean, you're not even in the top three in terms of public cloud providers by market share.
Just to add, if you look at the latest IDC annual market share, we've gained maximum market share globally for enterprise application SaaS vendors for 3 years now, 16, 17, 18. I go back to the point, I can put millions and dollars of data storage on an EaaS platform and still have a greater turnaround. I can have a very large search engine on cloud and I can still be deemed as number one. I can have the whole world use a Microsoft or a competitive productivity tool software and still be deemed as everybody using on cloud, because these are segments which we don't play. So it's a very generic term. If you look at the database opportunity where large data centers from corporates will do a large lift and shift of their existing on-prem data into cloud, they are choosing Oracle as a preferred vendor. When business software, which runs large corporations, will actually get going their application, which today is on a hybrid model. They run half on-prem and half on the cloud. When that full migration, as per all the latest reports, whether it is Gartner, IDC, Forrester, they all say 2022, 2023, when they will all move their business software, that's where our revenues will look up. And as we see that we have a product which is right, our earnings and quarterly shares are now showing up very positively on the cloud. That for us is a pretty strong sign. So I will only reiterate to say that the 42-year-old maturity of the company of business software will start showing its true colors in time to come.
I'm talking today to Charyan Varghese, the Regional Managing Director and Vice President of ASEAN and South Asia for the global software firm Oracle. Now, I take on board what you just said about the cloud and how it's only a race that's just begun. And you talk about how successful Oracle has been. But then why And I want to ask, is there an element of denial within the organization? Because if you really are doing that well, then why have you recently reduced investor visibility into the financial health of your public cloud offerings? Because you stopped disclosing the amount of revenue you bring in from that business.
It's because of the change of business model. If you look at the old days, we used to have a business which was subclassified as license on-prem, and then a huge support, which used to be our mainstay of our business. However, in today's world, it becomes a wrong paradigm to classify something as on-prem and cloud, because look at the very fundamental of business shift. Customers today buy licenses on-prem, and we have an option where they can take the same software into cloud through BYOL, what we ran a very unique program called as Bring Your Own Licenses. Now, when customer migrations happen, it is sometimes not very easy to quantify which are the softwares which have gone on cloud, which are the softwares which are still in hybrid mode. So that we don't confuse our investors, so that we don't confuse the markets, that's why we started to give out a unified number. And that was a business direction. We felt it is right to inform our shareholders, it is right to inform our customers in the right spirit and just not based on market speculation. So we did it in the right business interest, and we stick to that.
So in your opinion, there is no element of denial within the Oracle Corp organization?
There is no sense of denial. If you would have heard even the same question been answered on another channel interview by our CEO yesterday, he's categorically said that. That is meant for better clarity of our shareholders. It is meant for better clarity and usage of the total adoption, because cloud is not cloud. As I said, we are not an organization which was born on the cloud. We are an organization which built grounds of the cloud. We had 430,000 existing customers who we are in the process to take them to cloud. So we have a mixed portfolio. We have a good hybrid story, and thereby accentuating that with the right information to the cloud becomes very important.
Trent, I'd also like to point out the fact that Oracle, like many other American corporations, have been utilizing an array of financial instruments to boost financial performance. I think in 2018, between buybacks and non-GAAP adjustments and a lower tax rate, you had, despite having unchanged revenue and declining GAAP net income, you still reported a 19% increase in non-GAAP EPS. And I see also that your debt levels have increased in response to borrowing to implement share buybacks. How would you respond by that assertion that operationally the performance has not come from better performance but from financial adjustments?
I think it's very imperative for the market to know that we are a cash-rich organization. So we have a very strong financial portfolio, we are cash-rich, and we have used different models in our era of 42 years. If you look back at history, over maybe a decade back, we were the most coveted ones in the M&A space. We were actually going after more than 8 to 10 acquisitions every year. We roughly did over 100 plus acquisitions to make our portfolio right in this growth to cloud, in the growth to data science and so forth. What we now believe is just a period of phase where we use different strategies at different point of time. We are very bullish about what we are doing and very relevant in our space. I mean, if we look back at what we are doing in ASEAN alone, as a regional perspective, we're getting an exciting set of customers which whom we never had. As I said, for the first time, our SME customers have grown larger in base than our large corporates. We are changing, I think probably the world is probably not aware, for the first time we created a specific unit, a whole new sales paradigm to go after the small and medium business. Now, this was unheard in the market. But I think the new scheme of things, the new realms of businesses need us to change and retweak our strategy.
All right, Charin. Well, I'm sure this is a story that will go much, much further beyond the 42 years that you've been in operation. So I look forward to the next time you and I have a conversation. Thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you. you, Chuang. Such a pleasure to speak to you. And we look forward to some exciting times in ASEAN and especially in Malaysian markets.
I was talking to Charan Varughese, the Regional Managing Director and Vice President for ASEAN and South Asia for the global software firm Oracle, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile for unlimited experiences. Baru la best.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.